CinemaVino is brought to you by Audible. Do you want to take a deeper dive into what you love? I'm a Beatles fanatic, and I love to hear Alfred Molina read Bob Spitz's biography about the world's greatest rock band. Spitz's writing is crisp and easy to follow, and his exhaustive research puts you in the room for key moments in Beatle history.
Todd, have you ever heard of a book series called Dune?
I've heard vaguely
of it. Do you know how many sequels there are?
There's like 10 or 20,000.
There are a lot. With Audible, you gain access to these plus thousands of audiobooks and podcasts across a wide variety of genres.
Pretty awesome. You can download or access all the titles you want, plus keep one title per month. Download the Audible app and you can listen at home, in the car, or pretty much anywhere life takes you.
Sign up for a free 30-day trial to experience all the perks of membership, plus receive a free title just for signing up.
Visit audibletrial.com/cinemavino to get your free 30-day trial. That's audibletrial.com/cinemavino. Welcome back to CinemaVino. I'm Todd Wofford, here with Sean Jordan.
Hey.
And it's going to be a two-man CinemaVino. It's going to be what in the theater they call a two-hander. It's also...
Wait. We have four hands.
I know, but we'll just have to keep ourselves busy with the other two, if you know what I mean. So anyway...
Mailbag money.
Yes, I forgot to hit the button. Hold on. Stand by. That's the wrong button. I'm going to get these buttons down eventually, but enjoy this guitar part. This is incredible.
12-string?
Yeah, that is a 12-string.
Mailbag Monday!
There's the right button. I promise we're professional. I mean, you heard that ad at the beginning. We are professional people.
You color-coded the buttons. Yeah. I feel like it hasn't done anything.
I know. It's actually like making it worse. It's throwing me off. I feel like I just hit all the wrong buttons now. So...
I don't remember what's the purple button, what's the green button.
And that's the thing. It's like these buttons kind of look similar. It's like there's a blue and a purple, and they kind of look like each other.
So the color coding doesn't do anything.
No.
It'll just all be red.
I got to go back and rethink these color schemes. I got to, like, it's a whole different thing. I need, like, a post-it note for these colors. So anyway, so welcome back. I'm sorry the first couple minutes of this has been a shambles, but... So
we're professionals.
Yeah, we are
professionals here.
Yeah, we're running a tight ship. So for our mailbag question, this is a question I'm going to put onto the internet, the social media. You guys can chime in too with your comments on CinemaVino Podcast on Instagram or CinemaVino Podcast at gmail.com. So what was the first movie you ever remember seeing in a theater? And so I've got my answer. I know, Sean, you got yours. So let's hear it, Sean. What was the first movie you ever remember seeing in a movie theater?
The one I remember seeing was Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Notre Dame.
Notre Dame.
Yeah.
It was the Hunchback of Notre Dame, 1996. I only remember it because I remember being so scared by one of the scenes that I had to be carried out because I was screaming.
Yeah.
I remember enough that, like, I remember being scared. I don't remember what specific part scared me. I remember there being lava.
Yeah.
But it's been a while since I've revisited that movie, so maybe it'll bring back some scars if I go back and watch it.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to go back and open those wounds back up.
I'm ready to be hurt again, you know?
It's like, flog me, Disney.
Yeah. 20 plus years later.
Mm-hmm. I didn't see that in the theaters. I remember renting it on VHS, and it was dark, even by...
Yeah.
Disney had some, between Lion King and
Anastasia.
Yeah, there was some dark stuff in that time period for animation. So even by those standards, having the Hunchback of Notre Dame and Victor Hugo, that was a dark story. So I just remember Demi Moore was the voice of the female lead. I think Tom Hulce was from Amadeus, was the male lead.
Who was? No.
I remember Jason Alexander was the voice.
Yeah, Jason Alexander was Hugo.
Was he?
Yeah.
Okay, why am I thinking Tom Hulce?
He might have been in it.
Or am I thinking, did he do the voice of Hercules, which was around then too?
He might have been Hercules.
Okay. So was Jason?
No, Tom Hulce was Quasimodo.
In Hunchback.
And Jason Alexander was Hugo.
Okay.
Okay.
Gotcha.
Okay.
I knew Jason Alexander was in there somewhere. It had a good cast.
That is a really good cast.
Yeah. I remember liking it. The animation was incredible. But yeah, it was kind of dark for its time.
Demi Moore as Esmeralda? Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting you mentioned that because it's like this wasn't the first movie I remember going to see, but I remember becoming very upset during Roger Rabbit, going to see that when they lower the...
That was a scary part.
Yeah, they lower the tune into the dip.
And all you get back is eyeballs?
Yeah, and they kill it. Yeah, that horrified me as a kid.
I think that freaked me out as a kid, too.
I had to look away, because I remember being in the theater, and I remember my mom was shocked.
Well, Christopher Lloyd was such like a cartoonish villain.
Yeah.
He was so great, but he was like believably evil.
Yeah, he was. It was a little too real. Scared the hell out of me.
Dude, kids' movies are terrifying.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's even Wonka and stuff like that, that they have some really dark aspects.
Yeah, Wonka is Salvador Dali? No.
Roald Dahl. Yeah. And that's like one or two steps away from like being a snuff film. You turn that dial a couple steps away and that gets real dark.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Oof. Yeah. There's a lot of murder and mayhem in there.
Yeah. Roald Dahl did some weird shit.
He did.
Kid stories.
Yay. But yeah, I can relate to that of like being terrified by a movie scene. I remember that specifically, like freaking me out.
So I'm sure I saw something else in theaters prior to this, but this is the first one that I remember specifically being in a theater for.
Yeah. For me, I remember seeing, it wasn't the original run of Return of the Jedi. They re-released it a few years later. My middle sister took me to go see it. Don't remember a whole lot about it. I was probably 5 or 6.
I was going to say, do you know about what year it was?
It was in the mid-80s, mid to late 80s. I think it was like 86 or 7. So I was probably about first grade. And I remember Jabba the Hutt distinctly. And I remember like Boba Fett and his like flying like his rocket armor.
Yeah.
Rocket pack or whatever.
Jetpack.
Yeah, jetpack. But it's interesting. I actually remember a trailer in that movie more than I remember the movie itself.
Do you remember what it was for?
It was for a movie, because I had to go back and look it up, because I remember like on YouTube years later, I was like, I remember there was a trailer, and John Cusack was in it, and it was called The Journey of Natty Gann. It was a Disney movie. And
Journey of Natty Gann?
Yeah.
Is it on Disney Plus now?
I'm sure it is. Oh. I'm totally sure it is. Because, Meredith Salinger was the female lead, and she's married to Patton Oswalt now. But she was probably, 15 back then. It was basically, like, set in the 1800s, and she had a wolf-like dog that she took with her everywhere. She was basically trying to ride the rails and find her dad, Old West frontier times. So, basically, it was Jack London, but with the lead as a female. So
and a child.
Yeah. And basically, you took, like, the boy and, like, White Fang, made him into a girl. Still had the wolf and everything, and then John Cusack would be your romantic lead or whatever. So
did he hold a boombox over his head?
That would be awesome. And we would be already having podcasts over that if that was the case. If he had a like an 1800s like boombox playing Peter Gabriel, we would already talk about that.
Just rocking a duster.
That was a damn fine movie too. Say anything?
Yeah.
Didn't see that in the theater, but I do remember seeing that in like VHS, like right after it came out.
That would be a good one to pot on one day.
Yeah. One of the best like date movie, Valentine Day movies.
16 Candles.
Yeah.
Say Anything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah. Which one doesn't belong? But I remember like, because, my wife and I do a different movie for Valentine's Day every year. We never go out. So I cook her meal and then we watch classic Valentine's Day movie. So we've done When Harry Met Sally. We've done Pretty Woman. Dirty Dancing, Say Anything.
Did you do Ghost?
We've done Ghost. Yeah, we've done that one. We've knocked quite a few off the list. And it's interesting because we never did Sleepless in Seattle. So I'm glad we did that for the podcast for how much it sucked.
Yeah, if you had done that for Valentine's and just
a bummer.
Sleazy and creepy.
Cringy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't age well.
Yeah. It's weird that I saw Return of the Jedi. I'm a Star Wars nut now. And I remember the trailer for that movie better than I remember going to see Return of the Jedi. So
would you have had the context to appreciate Return of the Jedi having not seen, or had you seen?
That's my first. Two? Yeah.
Weird. So you saw Return of the Jedi as your first foray in the Star Wars.
Which kind of makes sense as why it's like, the space battles I'm sure were cool because I was a big nerd, but it was like,
there aren't even that many space battles. I mean,
yeah.
In the first one in Jedi there are, but
yeah, but it was like, I'm sure I was probably kind of confused by the plot. Like, who are these people? Like, this gold robot and, all these weird, like the slug and all.
Why is he thawing out this ice cube guy?
Yeah. I'm sure I was lost not knowing anything, so that probably didn't help.
Why is this giant squid man telling everybody where to go?
And it's weird because I think I watched Empire next. I went backwards.
What the fuck?
Yeah, it was a weird, bizarre upbringing I had. You know, it's working backwards. But it's weird because I did that with a lot of other stuff. I remember Abbey Road was the first Beatles album I ever heard, which is the last one that they recorded.
But at least there's not a continuity to where, like, you have to appreciate the story from start to finish.
No, but I definitely started at the end and worked my way to the beginning.
Yeah. Did you find that affected, like, your affinity for the later stuff, where some people are
totally
more like, I really like the early stuff, but the later stuff sucks. And you're like, I like the later stuff.
I'm still love the Abbey Road album. That's for that reason. So say it's one of my favorites.
Everyone knows Abbey Road sucks.
Exactly.
I'm kidding. Sorry.
No, I mean,
I want to be welcome to your house.
That was definitely my favorite Beatles album, just for nostalgia, just for that reason.
Yeah.
So I don't necessarily think it's their best one, but it's just the one I remember hearing first. So, but I do love Return of the Jedi. I think that's like my first movie theater, you know. So I don't know what the ideal age to go see a movie for the first time is, but. You know,
see, the problem is, like, if you go when you're young, you can only really go to enjoy kids' movies, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, the cinema experience is a different thing. Like, when do you start going to movies to enjoy movies?
Yeah.
You know, to enjoy films, cinema.
That was probably middle school for me, is when I started really going to go see, like, great movies, you know?
Yeah. I remember just, like, leaving Cinemark having seen, like, Batman Begins.
Yeah.
Or like The Dark Knight. Like, I remember leaving those movies and just being like, I have nothing. I have no notes. Yeah. No notes. 10 out of 10.
Yeah. And that's a great feeling. But that's honestly how I felt going to see Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah. You know,
I mean, as an adult, obviously, but it was like, man, that was outstanding.
And there is something to be said about like a larger conversation around the cinema experience these days, you know, especially with COVID and just streaming services, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
Not going to get into that, but like right age to take a kid, you know, to a kid specific movie.
Yeah.
5 or 6.
Yeah, I think
know?
So.
I think whenever they're ready to be on an airplane, you know, if they can sit in one spot for an hour and a half.
They can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, you know, our son's 2, 2 and a half. It's like he can kind of meander in and out of a movie when we put it on.
Yeah. He can play with toys and like wander off to the side and he's like casually watching Spider-Man do whatever on the side.
Yeah. Yeah, he can, or Cars, Lightning McQueen, it's like he can kind of tune in and out of it.
But you can't sit in a spot for an hour and a half.
Not yet. No, we're not there yet.
Nope.
So, but yeah, and then also you run the gamble, like you were saying, of like, it, you know, even 5 or 6, you know, you're going to have.
I was going to say, I couldn't sit in a theater for an hour and a half.
Well, you know, so you're going to have scenes that upset you too.
Yeah.
You know, it's like there's going to be stuff that make you want to leave. So, also a risk.
Yeah.
So.
Well, they were just so mean to Quasimodo.
I know.
I mean, come on.
Such a dark
movie. He's just trying to survive in a harsh world.
I was hoping they'd do Les Mis for, you know, if they're going to do Victor Hugo, you know?
Yeah.
So, next question is there a movie that we haven't done that you're absolutely dying to do? Like, first movie that pops in your head?
First movie that pops in my head is The Warriors.
Yeah, we talked about that one.
Yeah. So. This is one that I'm going to try to squeeze in somewhere. Somehow, eventually, I'll do it.
Yeah.
This one and Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh, yeah. Another great one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another great. That was great in the theater, too. That was a good experience.
That's a movie that I can quote. That was one that me and my friends always quoted back and forth to each other.
Yeah.
It's very musical. It's very, like, just, it's fun.
Starring a guy from Tulsa, Tim Blake Nelson.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, he's one of the guys that escapes and go for Everett.
They turned him into a toad.
Such a great actor.
Such a great actor.
I mean, just such a wide variety of stuff.
I saw something that was like, you know, big names come and go, but character actors are forever.
Yes. We'll call that the Dabney Coleman rule, you know. But yeah, I mean, I would love to do, I mean, really, I want to go back and look at some of the lesser Spielberg movies, you know, because Taylor had the idea of doing, you know.
Least favorite movies by a big director.
Yeah. Or lesser heralded, like Rotten Tomatoes, like lower scored movies by great directors. I mean, that either way. But
well, yeah. We've done some like unknown titles by big directors.
I want to go back and do War of the Worlds by Spielberg. I want to go back and check that out.
Yeah.
Just because he's such a great director. It's like even his mediocre movies, there's a lot to unpack with him.
Well, and Travis shared a list of, I think it was James Cameron movies. And James Cameron movies like ranked from like best to worst.
Yeah. And Christopher Nolan too.
Yeah, that's what it was. Christopher Nolan, not James Cameron. But yeah, Christopher Nolan, James Cameron, those guys that have like a really big catalog, you know, find the worst one or find like the least popular one.
Yeah. I mean, because I remember, like, it'd be like Christopher Nolan go back and do Insomnia, which was a remake of an earlier movie. Swedish? European, somewhere. But I thought that was a great movie with Al Pacino, Robin Williams, Hilary Swank. That was good.
I don't think I saw it.
That was great. But and it's a good, like, true crime kind of a story. I that would be a great one to do for him, that kind of people probably don't know about because it gets overshadowed, obviously, by the, you know, Dark Knight trilogy, The Prestige.
Memento.
Yeah, all of his other stuff. But it's a good movie. Yeah. It's a good Christopher Nolan movie. He kind of took the original, made it his own. But yeah, World of Rules for sure, for me, for sure.
Any other ones that stick out to you that you really want to do?
It's like, man, I just want to do a bunch of, like, Spielberg dives. If we're talking, like, truly movies, that, like, his most disappointing movie is 1941, which was based on the big, like, scare that happened after Pearl Harbor. It's a comedy. But, I mean, the number of people, it's like the wackiness that when they thought that the Japanese were going to, like, bomb the West Coast. And so just the hysteria that erupted. A lot of it's based on real stuff.
That's one where I'd love to be in the pitch meeting room. They're like, all right, I got it for you. It's a period piece about World War II. It's a comedy.
Yeah. And just, like, there had to be cocaine involved in that.
Yeah. Speaking of which, The Producers. That's a movie I want to do. A lot of the ones I want to do have a lot of, like, heavy musical elements to it.
Yeah, I'm down. But The Producers.
I would love to do The Producers. Love to do Blues Brothers.
Yeah. Love to do that, too. But, yeah, supposedly 1941, it had a huge budget. So this was, for Spielberg, this was his third movie after Jaws, Close Encounters. And, I mean.
So he just had a blank check to do whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, Dan Aykroyd's in it. John Belushi's in it. I mean, you can go down the list. Christopher Lee is in it. The cast is nuts.
Oh, that cast is fueled by cocaine.
Yeah. Oh, it's crazy. And so it made money, but it was a disappointment compared to his earlier movies. And so basically he asked George Lucas to step in and produce his next movie. He told George Lucas, like, I'm going to do a safe movie. I'm going to do a Bond movie for the next one just to make money and just, like, take it easy. It's a safe pick. I'm just going to direct the next James Bond movie. And George Lucas said, well, I've got a better idea than Bond. He said, we're going to do an archaeologist instead. It's set in World War II. So he's like, I've got this idea. And, you know, it's like a lead character. Basically, he's trying to keep artifacts out of the hands of the Nazis. And so basically.
That doesn't sound like it'd be a successful movie.
Yeah. Yeah. That's been forgotten by time.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Spielberg liked the idea of having a producer like Lucas to keep him in check and keep him from spending out of control. And
which Lucas isn't exactly like the model of keeping things in check and not spinning out of control.
He's not, but he was compared to what Spielberg did. Where they, that was like 1941 was at the time was one of the most expensive movies. It may have been the most expensive movie ever made. So, I mean,
and then Waterworld.
Yeah. Yeah. You had several movies knock it off after that. I mean, you had Terminator 2.
Well, cause didn't Spielberg call the director of Waterworld? Mm-hmm. And was just like, don't film on open water.
Yeah.
Just don't do it.
After Jaws, he said, it's a nightmare. And the guy said, no, we'll do it anyway.
We're doing
$250 million later.
Yeah, quarter billion.
My favorite thing about that was when they built a set that was like an island-sized set. It was like a metal island, like an atoll, and it sank.
Yep, because there was a hurricane, wasn't there?
Yeah, it got destroyed. So that sequence obviously is not in the movie. Yeah. So
shame. They should have just put a camera on it and filmed and built it into the movie somehow.
Mm-hmm. Crazy. But yeah, we're drinking a Clicto Chiarelli. This is an Italian Blanc de Blanc. So for Sean's birthday.
Yeah. Blanc de Blanc means white de white.
Exactly. Blanc de Blanc is going to be primarily Chardonnay grapes. A lot of times it'll be 100% Chardonnay, but you will see occasionally a little bit of something like Pinot Blanc mixed in. This one has an Italian grape called Gentile.
Gentile.
Pretty rare white grape that they thought was extinct for a while. Somebody brought it back. They found it, brought it back, and it's now being blended into, you know, sparkling whites.
Mm.
Yeah, nice.
This is nice. It's like, it's not as harsh as a lot of bubblies usually are. Mm-hmm. It's very like a soft,
yeah,
enjoyable, palatable.
Doesn't have the heavy fizz you'd expect.
No, it's a very mild fizz.
Nice Bradford pear. I mean, to me, it has that good Chardonnay texture. If you like a Chardonnay, this definitely has a Chardonnay feel to it. Kind of the fruit forward.
Yeah.
It doesn't have like the oaky buttery flavor that you'll get in American Chardonnays, but it's like, it definitely has that crisp fruity, it's a lot of fun. It'd be a great party wine to do.
I was going to say, this would be a good like wedding wine. Yeah. It's very drinkable, very toastable.
It's about $20, so it's not going to be crazy.
No.
You know? So it's going to be a good, like, festive bubbly, not going to be outrageously expensive. So, yeah. Clito Chiarli is the name of it. Blanc de Blanc.
Clito Chiarli.
They have a Lambrusco, which is going to be a red, and they have a rosé. So they run the spectrum. We've done the Lambrusco for the podcast before. Never done the white. That's nice. So I would recommend it heartily.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. So this has been another episode of Cinema Vino. This has been another Mailbag Monday.
This has been a Mailbag Monday.
Yeah. Tune in next time. We're going to do Demolition Man.
Yes.
It's going to be just a hootenanny.
It'll be a real old hootenanny.
Yeah. We're going to get George and Ringo back here, and we're going to keep this going. So we thank you guys so much, Sean Jordan.
Yeah.
Thank you much.
Thank you.
See you guys
next time.
Next time.
Be sure to listen, rate, and subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Our website is at cinemavino.net, and reviews of these movies can be found at toddwoffordmovies.com.
Mailbag Monday!